Gang's all here. Glad you are too. It's 5:10. And welcome to the broadcast on this Thursday already. How about that? 27th day of February. Dave, did you get a cord for my reel-to-reel machine?
I did not. I was able to use another machine.
I brought one in.
Well, I appreciate that. I got a splitter from your machine, though.
A what?
A splinter.
Oh. Yeah, it's in a wood case.
Yeah. I noticed.
It's old. I think it still works, though. I'm not sure.
Oh, I think it probably would have worked if I could have gotten power to it.
Yeah, you were trying to listen to some sports tapes, were you?
I actually had an old reel. It was actually an old Cubs game, and I was trying to determine what was on the reel. So I needed to listen to it, and I asked Viv and Super Joe, I said, do you think Bob would mind if I used his reel-to-reel? And then I thought, well, it could be an antique, so I better text him.
No, it's here for use.
Well, thank you.
You know what? That reminds me, I have to bring in, I have some tapes and cassettes, all sorts of not only sports oddities and memorabilia and vintage clips, but I have some rock and roll material too that might be fun to play here when we do an occasional feature. When we did a couple of those in the last month or so, and you didn't like it when I called it the dumpster of memories. So I think we're going to go with the vault of treasured audio or something like that.
So what are you going to do, reel in your reel-to-reel into the studio there?
Well,
because there isn't one in there.
No, but we can listen to what we want to play that we think will be good and then get it.
Pull it
transferred
off, yeah.
Right,
we used to have reel-to-reel machines not only in every studio, in every control room, in the newsroom, in the sports office, and now we have, I believe, one. Before you brought yours in, we had one in the building.
What about a turntable? Do we have
I think we have a turntable. We have a cassette deck. No 8-track player, as far as
well,
I know.
Well, no, we don't need that. I never had those anyway. You need at least one of those old machines in every format.
Beta as well.
So you can transfer. The Beta?
We had something
Beta Max.
Yeah, Beta Max.
Remember briefly, we had something called mini discs.
Oh, yeah. You know what?
Yeah.
I just found a bag. The last time I was here at the station, when I don't even remember what show I was doing, but the last time I had one of those players, a DAT machine. Is that what they called it?
That was
another thing.
That was something else.
Well, I had a bag of all of those, some of those machines and old discs, and I brought that into Bill, the chief engineer, and I just said, could you go through this and tell me if any of this is garbage, or should I keep this, or do you want this? I think everything in that bag actually belonged to the station anyway. So maybe if it's still useful and worth something, they'll give me a credit on my next paycheck. Get a couple
bucks
sure. more.
I'm sure they would.
For bringing that back.
Yes.
Let's talk to WGN-TV reporter Mike Lowe, who is in Milwaukee. Mike, did I hear right the shooter was currently still employed at Molson Coors?
Yes. According to Milwaukee police, the shooter, who has not been identified yet, other than that he was a 51-year-old employee still wearing his uniform during the attack, had been an employee here. There were reports that he had possibly been fired that day and then at some point left the building and swiped back in with a stolen ID card, carrying two handguns, one of them equipped with a silencer, and carried out the attack.
And is there anything new as far as where he got the weapon or motive?
At this point, we don't know much about the weapons. Nothing further on that has been released by the authorities. We also don't know anything about the motive other than, as we said, the reports that are out there that he possibly could have been fired from his job that day. Authorities are also waiting to publicly release the names of the victims, the five co-workers who were shot and killed by this man. They're waiting possibly 24 to 48 hours to release those names to allow for the time for people traveling in from out of town to get here before they make those names public.
Mike Lowe on the scene of that horrific shooting in Milwaukee. Appreciate that. Keep us posted, Mike.
Will do. Thanks, Bob.
5:21 right now. And Jerry is on the phone calling in from Dyer, Indiana. Jerry, you're the first caller of the day. That means you win something. How you doing?
Pretty good, Bob. Thank you very much. And I'm glad you're back on WGN. Love it.
I appreciate that. What are you doing up so early?
Well, I you're right. I am retired. I only volunteer once a week at Dyer Hospital over here. So that's all I do. But I just retired from Advanced Auto. And I love it. I love it. But what I want from you is you've been talking about your vinyl record collection. I got about 500 records myself, albums. Is there any place near me besides Beverly Records, which I go to? Is there any place near Northwest Indiana that's a vinyl shop?
Beverly's fantastic. That's a great place. I don't know, but as Wally Phillips used to say, but we'll find out for sure. And
okay,
I'll mention it on the radio when we hear from somebody. What's that?
There was a place in Lansing, and they moved to Hammond, and I can't find them. I can't find them, so that's all I'm asking you.
You want to sell your collection?
No, no, sir. I want to buy.
Oh, you want to buy more? Oh, okay. Jerry, let me tell you something. You mentioned volunteer work. That's what I'm doing here every morning, 5 to 9. And, you know, I'll tell you something. You're my idol now, you know, living the life. Although the hours are pretty good when you're not working, but the pay leaves a little something to be desired.
Yeah. And what do you – oh, my wife wants to go on a river cruise. We travel a lot. Would you recommend that I cancel that as time goes on until we find out something with the virus?
Unless your river cruise is going to one of the affected countries, it all depends where it's going.
In Paris.
Well, I don't think you have too much to worry about in the area of
really?
France. No, I don't think so. Oh, well, you know what? You may want to play it safe and just take a river cruise to the Skokie Lagoons for now. Hold on a second, Jerry, and we'll get you a prize. How about a $50 gift certificate from Builder's Supply Outlet?
Sounds wonderful. Sounds great. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Hold on, and we'll get the necessary information from you. Builder's Supply, so much more than kitchen cabinets. Check out The Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom in Broadview.
I might want to interject something here, Bob, about coronavirus. We're looking at a report now coming into the newsroom that this coronavirus has now been reported in every country and on every continent except Antarctica now. So that might impact his trip planning.
Wait a minute. Is Jerry still on the phone? Can I talk to him again? Is it okay?
Yeah, he might want to change his plans to Antarctica.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Jerry?
Yes, sir.
Call the River Cruise Company and say you're going to Antarctica. All right. Have a nice vacation. It's 5:24 right now. And where was I here? Did I finish talking about Builder's Supply? Oh, yeah, I think I did. Why is it that I like this mocha? You know, I'm not a coffee drinker, but lately I've pressed the button in the machine back here for mocha, and I really like it. Is that because there's a lot of sugar in the mocha? I don't even know what it is. There's milk in there, right?
There's coffee and there's chocolate.
Chocolate, yeah.
Yeah, it's
that's chocolate, that's what you like.
Of course.
So this is not really good if I'm chugging mochas here in the morning. So I get caffeine in here and some coffee, but this is kind of, as my wife would classify this as a dessert, probably. That's why I like it. Oh, well.
Yeah.
So this was my nightmare coming in this morning. My nightmare. I'm heading in, and I'm just before Kimball on the Kennedy Express lanes, and some guy right in front of me, flat tire.
I saw him.
Yeah. Did you?
On the right
shoulder.
I was
thinking maybe it's you.
No, but I did. You know, you come up on the shoulder in the express lanes is very narrow.
Yeah, he had his blinkers on.
Yeah, he did, and that gave everybody a fair warning. But I would worry about that stopping in there because, I mean, you don't have much choice if you have a flat, but people come flying through there, and especially further down on the express lanes, Bob, you know, you have those turns where you can't see what's ahead of you.
Well, my worry was, what if this happens to me on the way in?
Okay. Well, but it didn't. It happened to that poor guy.
You know what I'm doing now? You know, I don't know if your car has the various displays. You can you can see how much mileage you have left on a tank of gas. And if you have the tire gauge readout, you can see the tire pressure. I used to always have the mileage left on the tank of gas showing. Now I put on the tire readouts all the time to look at that, because I'm freaked out about that. Because Nick is off the air at 4, and I think I saw him leaving today, but usually he's gone right after 4 a.m., so it's not like there's an all-night show guy here. So if I'm not showing up, whoever works all night just stays. So, you know, what you guys do the show, right?
We would cover for you till you got here.
No problem. Yeah.
But I will say this. I had a flat tire coming in. This is probably about a year ago, coming in on the Edens to the Kennedy. And I got off at pulled into a gas station up on Irving Park, just off the expressway that was open. Pulled into a spot and I couldn't deal with it then, right? Because I had to get here. So I went in and asked the guy, the all-night gas station, I said, do you mind if I leave my car? And I got to go to work, and as soon as I'm done, I'll come back. And he said, no problem. Guy was very nice. I think it was right around Irving Park in Kimball. And I came back afterwards. My car was undamaged, untouched.
That's good to know.
Mary Boyle gave me a ride back there, and she followed me to a tire place, and at that point, the tire was shredded. I tried to use that fix-a-flat stuff.
Didn't work. Yeah, I was just thinking, how about I could just do the show on the phone, couldn't I? What about that? Should that be our emergency plan?
The whole show?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, or until I could get in here and take care of my car.
Well, better ask the boss.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we're qualified to make that call.
We're not saying anything.
You know, these are the things that go through my mind on the way to work.
In the middle of the night, if you get sick, it's always a terror for me, you know?
Yeah, but if you're like, sick, you can notify somebody hours before you have to be in if you feel sick, like when you go to sleep.
Well,
right?
Not when you wake up, your alarm goes off and you're, you know, sick right then.
Well, don't you get sick before that, though?
Well,
Wouldn't
sometimes.
You feel it? I mean, all of a sudden, you feel fine, you go to sleep, you wake up and you're sick?
Well,
really?
That could happen. People get the flu in the middle of the night a lot.
I guess so. This is the new format at WGN, Neurotic Worries on the 8s.
We will cover for you. Just
well,
don't
sure
worry
you do
about
a great
it.
Job. But
we'll need that song.
I was just, you know, concerned about that when I saw the guy with the flat tire this morning.
Good point.
Yeah. What else is on my mind today? Oh, I have to tell you about, I'm watching more television than I've ever watched in my life, because, you know, I go home and I usually have some lunch, then I'd have a nap, but I try to keep my nap down to a minimum, like, you know, an hour, hour and a half at the most, so I have more time to watch television. And I'm flipping around and I see this Pavarotti documentary that Ron Howard directed and put together, I guess, about a year ago. It's running on Showtime. Now, I'm not a fan of opera necessarily, and it was tremendous. I mean, if you can see this, it's running on Showtime. It's outstanding, and you don't have to be an opera lover to enjoy this. So I'm much more cultured this morning. Can you tell?
Yes.
Do I sound different yet? Yeah. This is the new Bob Surratt. Good morning. Agribusiness Brief Time with Orion.
Good morning. The coronavirus didn't have quite as much impact on the agricultural markets as Wall Street yesterday, but certainly it was present in the trading. So as we look at closing prices, March wheat gained a penny and a quarter a bushel. March corn lost 2.25 cents a bushel. And March soybeans up a penny and a half a bushel. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, June lean hog contract up 85 cents a hundredweight. And the April live cattle contract down 92 cents. And the April feeder cattle contract up $1.40 a hundredweight. Today is the beginning of the Commodity Classic for 2020. It's being held in San Antonio, Texas, and it'll go through Saturday, the 29th. Max Armstrong is there to cover that for us. And we want to mention National FFA Week. It continues through Saturday, and FFA chapters across the country will be, in one way or another, calling attention to the role of FFA in building agricultural leadership for the future. Also, there's a deadline tomorrow if you want to sign up in the Conservation Reserve Program for a five-year period. You'll have the opportunity to do it only until the end of the business day tomorrow. That's the deadline for doing that at your Farm Service Agency office. And the Illinois Agricultural Leadership Foundation is accepting applications for the class of 2022, but that will end on Friday. So if you have interest in the program, and it's a great one, you have that long to get your application in. That's Ag Biz. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Our thanks to Orion. It's 5:40. If Jerry from Indiana is still listening, here's a couple of bits of information for you from a texter out of the 708 area code. Hi, Bob. Tell Jerry to try the Hammond Salvage Shop. And then from 312, where is this? Oh, here it is. Vinyl records are on sale at two Kenosha, Wisconsin locations. That might be a bit of a trip for him, but I knew we'd get some suggestions. Well, last night, if you're keeping score here, I set the all-time record for most hours of sleep so far on this job. I was asleep by 8:30 last night. That has never happened before. And let me tell you something. I don't feel quite right this morning. So there's just no way to do this. I mean, too much sleep. Because I'll tell you what happens. You get so used to, when you work the early morning hours, you get so used to maybe getting at the most like 6 hours of sleep. So what happened is, well, do the math. I'm asleep at 8:30. So 6 hours later, I'm awake. So let's see. What was that? Was it like about 1:30 or something like that?
2:30.
2:30 in the morning. I wake up, and then it took me a while to get back to sleep. And then, you know, I get up and I'm tired. So I don't know what to do now.
Yeah, and, you know, there's another. So my problem, I do the same thing. I go to bed about 8:30. But that, and lately I've been waking up at about midnight just for like 10 minutes or 20 minutes and then force myself to go back to sleep. So I don't know if it's, you know, maybe I should push back the bedtime a little bit to get that out of there.
So you sleep right through.
Right, right.
Yeah. Or you can try my trick if you have trouble, if you wake up in the middle of the night, because as I've said, the television puts me to sleep. I don't even turn the TV on. I just grab the remote control, put it in my hand, and I fall asleep in about 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So if you want to go with that.
or buy a movie on pay-per-view, that will always, then you just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the movies that I fall asleep during, and then, you know, I'll watch it again, I'll go back and I'll fall asleep at the same spot. So maybe there's some subliminal message in some of these that puts you to sleep. Not sure. It's 5:43 right now. And let's see, what else did I want to tell you about here today? I'm going to try to go to sleep later tonight and then see what happens tomorrow. And
I'll
report back to you.
Short nap. 20 minutes.
No, that's too short.
I
can't do that. That's too short.
Well, you'll feel much better.
I got to go at least an hour.
An hour?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's too long. You wake up so groggy.
Yeah. You're less groggy if you nap for 20 minutes, really?
Yeah. Feel rejuvenated, ready to go.
Okay.
You got to work out, too. That'll help you.
I do that sort of hours after I get up from my nap, because right after the nap, it's, you know, it's too hard to do anything. I have to have some tea or something to revive myself first. Steve Grzanich now with our weekly Associated Bank Thought Leader Conversation.
We're here with Ed Curry, certified mortgage planner and construction loan specialist at Associated Bank, in our Thought Leader chair this morning. Ed, welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Good morning to you as well. I want to begin with just reminding our listeners what it is you do at Associated.
I'm a mortgage loan officer, and we specialize in residential lending, whether that's for a regular non-construction home, a regular home you're going to buy and close, and typically that's single family and 2, 3, and 4 unit properties, as well as construction lending. So maybe you're going to buy a home, fix it up a little bit, or maybe build a brand new home. We can help you with all of that.
So how is business going these days?
It's strong. You know, it's a great confluence of both strong housing and low interest rates. Very rarely do you have the two of those things together. Generally speaking, when you have low interest rates, it's because the economy is slowing and you tend to see home buying slow a little bit. Of course, at that time when rates drop, you tend to have refinances increase as well. So right now with strong housing and low interest rates, we have a nice combination of home buying, home construction, as well as refinancing.
The numbers, let's talk about, like, for instance, a 30-year fixed, are in the threes.
Yes. That's, you know, historic lows, near historic lows. And really, once you get below 4%, it's a great opportunity to lock something in long term.
We've been talking over the last week or a couple of weeks, and even more over the last few days, about coronavirus and the impact that that's possibly having on your industry, on business. Is there an impact? Is it having an impact?
Certainly not directly, but indirectly, because of what that is having impact on the stock market and equity markets. Generally speaking, when you have significant sell-offs in stocks, you tend to see a lot of that money head towards bonds and fixed income instruments, mortgage-backed securities, for instance. So with the recent sell-off in stocks, a lot of money has gone into U.S. Treasuries, mortgage bonds, and that's dropped yields and lowered mortgage interest rates.
So when we see a couple of days of losses of about 1,900 points, let's say on the Dow, these huge 3% losses in the stock market, well, that the silver lining to that story will be what? Lower interest rates.
Lower interest rates, and they don't move in lockstep, and they don't move as quickly as that would seem to indicate. But absolutely, as you see yields drop, mortgage rates will follow. But at the same time, just as a lot of that is reactionary to some of the news headlines, in a lot of cases, you can see that reverse very quickly. So from a timing perspective, you'll see headlines about mortgage rates are at lows, but they're going lower, you know, all these experts. And that may be the case, but you may miss out on an opportunity if you're waiting from the go even lower.
It's that you better lock it down syndrome. I know I was in this recently where you have to really make a decision. Well, do I play the prices right?
That's
Will
right.
it go lower tomorrow, or should I lock in a really good rate? There's really no easy way to do that, is there?
There isn't. Take a look at what you can save and if it makes sense for you. And if what you can get today is something that would make you happy, jump on it. Don't wait for anything perceptively better.
Sure. So back to the construction part of this and the refinance and, you know, the loan part of this. When we see coronavirus, let's say we do have a more significant outbreak in the U.S., we see more volatility. Is there going to be some sort of impact on whether or not that's going to... So if we have, like, you know, number of more cases in the United States and people start getting scared away from doing normal things, that could eventually impact what you do as well, right? Or no?
It could. I would probably say the most likely impact would be, you hear about the various impacts economically and the slowdown there. I think if people perceive their personal finances to be impacted on the coronavirus based on maybe their job, based on personal economics, that may put them in a position to not make that purchase or not do some things that would you know, positively impact housing.
There have been a couple of positive reports where housing is concerned. I know the Case-Shiller index came out. We saw housing prices go up, but we're also seeing the number of homes being constructed at a near, I think I saw it was a 15-year high, the numbers out this week. Those are also positive signs for your business too, aren't they?
There is. I mean, you take a look at the housing stock across America, and it is really so dated. And not only dated, but such little supply for the people who are purchasing as well. So people are in a position to either find a home that they may not see as perfect, and in the HGTV world we live in, we can't simply buy a home that's nice. It has to be nice and perfect. You get a lot of people purchasing nice homes and improving them, as well as if they can't find any home, building a brand new one.
And that's where the part of your business comes in, the construction loan part of it. Talk to us a little bit about how a construction loan is different from just a regular mortgage.
You might actually start with how it's the same. In many cases, it really is the same because it is a permanent loan. It is something you close on one time. You don't have to refinance it after construction is complete. It's simply a loan that you could have for 30 years. The documentation requirements are nearly identical, with the addition of you need plans and a budget for what you're going to do on that project. The underwriting criteria is virtually the same. The product set, ARMs, fixed rates, virtually the same. So in many cases, it really is very, very similar to a regular loan. The big difference is it's going to the one appraisal that you do with a loan is based on the future value or the home as complete. So the appraiser is going to walk through a home, or if it's raw land, take a picture and do that appraisal, that opinion of value per se, based on the home as complete in the current market. And that appraisal is done up front before you start construction. So that is going to allow you to get a loan based on that future value. And then the other big difference is the payments. During the construction phase, payments are interest only. On the balance that you owe. So you'll start out with a very low interest only payment, and then that'll ramp up as you draw money to build your home. And then after construction's complete, the only thing that changes is the payments go to principal and interest. Same rate, same program, but now you're at a higher interest, or payment rather, because it's principal and interest.
Ed, this is a great conversation. I'm sure you have a lot more information you could offer people if they wanted to call and do a one-on-one with you. How would that work?
Feel free to call me at 847-214-2404, or you can email me at ed.curry, ed.curry, at associatedbank.com.
Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks much, Steve.
Ed Curry, certified mortgage planner and construction loan specialist at Associated Bank. He's our thought leader today. You can find more of our thought leader conversations and hear this one, too, at associatedbank.com/thought leadership. And now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, February the 27th. The second estimate of U.S. Fourth quarter GDP is out today. Also today, durable goods orders for January lead off some of the economic reports. Analysts are forecasting a 2% decline when the numbers are out at 7:30 Chicago time. We'll also get a first-time look at weekly unemployment benefits. Economists expect to see 215,000 initial claims, 5,000 more than last week's report. That would be in line with recent weeks and show a continued strong jobs market. Pending home sales for January are out today as well. Housing industry experts are predicting a 6.9% increase over December. Also today, on the earnings calendar, Anheuser-Busch, InBev, Best Buy, Gannett, JCPenney, AMC Entertainment, Beyond Meat, and Dell all reporting quarterly earnings. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, or rather Thursday. I'm a day ahead of myself. February the 27th.
Yeah, I almost said that, too. Yeah. I know, Steve, you'll be all over this story. Breaking bacon news starting today. Snackin' Bacon, available at Dunkin' restaurants nationwide. 8 half strips of bacon wrapped up in a sleeve.
Bacon.
The company says, here at Dunkin', we've been working hard to formulate the perfect afternoon pick-me-up. And really, what's better than a bag full of bacon? Are they serious? Afternoon pick-me-up? You can go right to sleep after that.
I've had really good dreams about bags of bacon, so this is good.
They say it's high-end bacon that's been smoked with natural cherry wood, then treated to a sweet and savory blend of brown sugar and black pepper seasoning. It's the same bacon used in Dunkin's sweet black pepper bacon breakfast sandwich. Duncan saying, it is not just any ordinary bacon. Okay. Good morning at 6:09. A footnote to our conversation about sleep. There are people who can sleep anywhere, anytime, in any position, including upright in an economy class airline seat. And then there are the rest of us, says this report from CNN. Neck pillows just don't cut it. Reclining a few inches does nothing. We need to lie flat, which is what makes Air New Zealand's prototype sleep pods so exciting. Did you hear about this? Yesterday, that airline filed patent and trademark applications for the Economy Sky Nest. Now, if you've been in first class or walked through it anyway, and I hate that, don't you? Walking through first class to get to your coach seat. Seems like everybody's looking up at you thinking, loser. Yeah. They filed a patent and trademark application for the Economy Sky Nest, the result of 3 years of research, development, and testing based on input from more than 200 of their customers. According to Air New Zealand's announcement, the Sky Nest will consist of six full-length lie-flat sleep pods in the economy cabin. Yeah, some of those first-class sections on different airlines have had elaborate seating where you can sort of stretch out. But this goes beyond that. The exact location within the aircraft yet to be confirmed. They say each pod will be about 6.5 feet long and 22 inches wide and come with a pillow, sheets, blanket, earplugs, and privacy curtains. The airline is also exploring additional features such as reading lights and USB outlets. They say a clear pain point for economy travelers on long-haul flights is the inability to stretch out. The development of the Economy Sky Nest is a direct response to that challenge. Each Sky Nest pod will come with a pillow, sheets, and blanket. Maybe for a little extra money, they'd give you a cat. As for pricing, the airline is yet to determine the costs and is still assessing the commercial proposition and product viability. But given there are only six pods on one aircraft, they will likely be in high demand and pricey, I'm sure. The general manager of Air New Zealand says, we see a future flying experience where an economy class customer on long haul flights would be able to book the Economy Sky Nest in addition to their economy seat to get some quality rest and arrive at their destination ready to go. So you'd actually have a regular seat and the Sky Nest? Wow. The airline will make a final decision on the Economy Sky Nest in the next year once it has assessed the performance of its inaugural year of their Auckland to New York operations, due to take flight in October of this year. That flight will take an estimated 17 hours and 40 minutes one way, making it one of the longest in the world. Yeah, you'd need a Sky Nest on a flight like that.
Does it come with a seatbelt? I mean, I'd be worried about turbulence issues.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know? I'm looking at some pictures of it here. No, I don't see a seatbelt, but I'm thinking if WGN would only install one of these behind the microphone, that could come in handy here.
Yeah. Quick power nap in between commercials?
Why not?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the top six at six with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
Here we go at 6:17. A 51-year-old worker still wearing his uniform fatally shot five fellow Molson Coors employees yesterday before killing himself. The company still has not identified the shooter. They do say, though, that he was an active employee. They did not provide details on a possible motive for the shooting or the identities of the victims pending family notification. About 1,000 people work at that complex, known for decades as the Miller Brewery.
Now, page two.
The Illinois House has passed legislation banning those controversial red light cameras in many Illinois communities. The bipartisan approval of a bill sponsored by Republican State Representative David McSweeney would ban red light cameras in non-home rule communities in Cook, DuPage, Kane, Lake, and Will counties, as well as in Madison and St. Clair counties east of St. Louis. Non-home rule communities, generally those with 25,000 or fewer residents, have more limited powers under state law. Chicago would not be affected by the ban.
Page three.
Mayor Lightfoot said yesterday she's very disappointed in the CDC for fanning the flames of fear about the spread of the coronavirus in the United States. The mayor essentially accused federal officials of fear-mongering.
I will candidly tell you that I was very disappointed with the comments of the CDC yesterday and members of the Trump administration around coronavirus. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. As I said, we had two cases here in Chicago. Those cases have been dealt with. The people are recovering. But in the event that we need to ramp up quarantining, we are absolutely prepared to do that.
With Chinatown restaurants already suffering from a dramatic decline in business tied to coronavirus fears, the mayor said the last thing Chicago needs is a premature alarm from federal officials.
Page four.
Two deaths yesterday. Veterans of Chicago TV. One name you know, and one you probably don't. First, Lee Phillip, the longtime talk show host from Channel 2, known as the First Lady of Chicago Television, before going on to co-create two of TV's longest-running soap operas, passed away in L.A. She was 91, and anybody who grew up in Chicago saw Lee Phillip on television. In fact, her noon break show was where I first started doing television. I was still doing rock and roll radio, and she had me on to do different features occasionally on that show. Always very kind to me, and ubiquitous on the Chicago broadcast scene for many, many years.
Very nice lady. And Ed, also involved in the soap operas, right?
Didn't her husband, yes, and then she got involved with Bill Bell, her husband, who passed away. When did he die? Back in 2005, The Bold and the Beautiful.
Okay.
They worked on that together and did very well. Lee Phillip was an 18-time Emmy winner, born in Chicago, grew up in Riverside, went to Riverside Brookfield High School, graduated from Northwestern. And the other death, and this really hit me because I worked with this woman at Channel 5 on many, many news stories. Anna Vassar passed away after a long illness. She was a producer and writer at NBC 5 for nearly 43 years. She did the 5 o'clock news there and many other programs. Her first love was politics. She covered political conventions, inaugurations, all sorts of election coverage, programming. She worked on the assignment desk, the Unit 5 investigative team. She covered the Olympics in Atlanta in 2011. And her husband, Paul Nagaro, one of the great cameramen in Chicago, who has been there for many, many years. So we pass along our condolences to that family. I mean, she was one of these stalwarts of local TV, and my experience with her was that she always had a smile, always fun to work with, always great to work with her husband, Paul. Anna knew Chicago history. She knew NBC history, and you were always in good hands when she was fixing your script and putting together your news story. She also carried on the tradition of City Desk and produced that show for a long time. So sad news to hear about the passing of not only Lee Phillip, but also Anna Vassar over at NBC 5.
To whom it may concern.
Moving on, number five story here in our top six at six. Plant-based meat has officially infiltrated pretty much every fast food restaurant in the game. Burger King has the Impossible Whopper. White Castle has Impossible Sliders. Dunkin' has the Beyond Sausage Sandwich. And KFC hopped on the bandwagon recently with plant-based chicken nuggets and wings, which they call Beyond Fried Chicken. According to KFC, their Beyond Fried Chicken is 100% plant-based. However, it's prepped in the same fryers as KFC's actual chicken, so it can get contaminated with residue or fat from that real chicken. Therefore, they're now saying it is not technically vegetarian, let alone vegan. As of right now, KFC does not have any other plant-based meal options on the menu. So there's your warning. Steve Grzanich, beware if you're thinking of going vegan. They want to stay away from that.
I think we're pretty safe in that area that I'm not.
Okay.
Stand by for news.
And The Bachelor is now casting seniors for a new dating reality show. Mary, did you hear about this?
I love this.
Did you see this? On, I guess on Monday's episode of The Bachelor, they had an announcement. Did you catch that?
It was just really quick, and they just said, we are now looking for seniors to try out for. And I go, what? I mean, it just like popped up really quick, and I go, finally. That's what they should do on Survivor, too. All these reality shows need to up it a bit and bring in, you know, different generations. I think Anna is awesome.
Shaking his head here.
You know what? Here's the problem, Mayor,
what?
With this. Because I just don't want to see somebody who is...
Making out?
No. Nothing like that. Late 60s or 70s getting rejected and being heartbroken. I mean, that's not a time in your life where you should have your heart broken.
Well, I guess not.
You know, kids in their 20s, right?
I thought you were going to say
it's a youngster. Getting, who cares?
Yeah, right, Bob? Right. I mean, not so you don't get a rose and you're 22, you'll bounce back.
Yeah, but you're better at taking rejection at that age, don't you think?
Well, but it's just you've been through it before.
I thought you were going to say you didn't want to see him in a hot tub. No. Which is going to make me a little upset.
Will they play this kind of music on that show? Or maybe they'll play some Glenn Miller for that one.
Yeah. But Dave, you got a point, Dave. But
ABC is casting a new version of the show with what they call Seniors Looking for Love. A casting call has been put out for people ages 65 and over. One of the show's producers posted more details on Instagram, captioning a photo of an older couple with the sunset in the background. You want to hear what it says?
Yes.
Are you entering your golden years and looking for romance? The producers of The Bachelor are looking for active and outgoing single men and women age 65 and up for a new exciting dating show. For more information, go to abc.com/casting.
Do you want to see your heart smashed to smithereens on national TV?
I think this will be great. I'm looking forward to it.
For the winners? Well, what about the people who get rejected?
I just want to see the fun personalities we're going to have with a bunch of older women going at each other. It'll be good.
Will there be somebody standing by in every scene with a defibrillator, in case?
Come on. Well, no, they says active.
Oh.
So these people have to be in good shape, I would think.
Well, you know what?
Because they do a lot of fun stuff like bungee jumping and all that.
ABC's got a hit. They've got a winner. And so you know what that means. You just keep spinning off, ripping off, and cashing in on the craze, I guess. I don't watch The Bachelor. Mary, I know you watch The Bachelor.
I'm trying to stop.
Everybody in my house watches The Bachelor.
It's so annoying.
I walk in every once in a while when my wife is watching, when my daughter's in town, my 19-year-old, they'll watch together. And, a couple weeks ago, I enjoyed seeing the pool party or whatever they were doing. But other than
that,
the hot tub party. But I just can't get into it. I don't know.
Yeah,
it seems so phony to me.
It is. It is very phony.
And it seems like all those people are like would-be actors and actresses, maybe, looking for a break.
Yeah, a lot of them are.
I was watching one that my wife's been watching, a show that's on Netflix called Love is Blind. Have you seen that?
No.
Where these couples don't see each other. They have a wall between them. They're in these pods, and then they get in. If they find someone that they love, they get engaged without ever having seen the other person.
I don't understand that either. Really? And I mean, I have never understood even people who get married and then, I know somebody in town here who has kind of a high profile, and years ago, I don't know if she was on some show. No, it wasn't. Somebody sponsored her wedding, and in return for putting the wedding on this cable channel, they gave the couple all sorts of products, it's been my experience that whenever you hear about these spectacular weddings that are televised or sponsored by somebody or take place you know, in a rocket ship or something. These marriages last about 6 months, right, usually.
Well, how many happy couples are there from The Bachelor? I mean, they're probably The Bachelorette. There are a few, right? But most of them, they don't end up getting married.
Does ABC reveal the scorecard on that?
I don't know, Mary. Do they?
You mean how many people actually?
How many
last?
Actually get married?
Oh yeah,
and what happens to those marriages? How long do they last?
Well, there's still a couple that's been married quite a long time, and with Ryan and Trista, they've been married, I don't know, a long time with, I think, 3 or 4 kids.
See, I agree with this person who just texted us from 847. Morning, Bob. The Bachelor is all scripted, totally fake. It seems that way to me. And I know the way they edit reality shows, and it's very misleading, I think, if you're looking for truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's dramatic and, you know.
Well, and they lure those people with the promise of all this publicity, and directly or indirectly, they can make money off of it. Yeah. So
they know what they're signed up for.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They become social influencers after that.
Let's see, ABC does not say here what the name of this show is going to be, but perhaps they'll just call it The Widower. How about that?
That's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Sarat on WGN Radio.
Good day.
Let's get to know Blackhawks forward Drake Caggiula now. Drake, do you still have the autographed picture of Jonathan Toews at home?
I sure do. It's at my house back in Whitby, and it's stored away somewhere. I'm not exactly sure where it is, but I still have that picture, and I still remember it clear as day.
He preceded you at the University of North Dakota. So how is it skating with him now as a member of the Blackhawks?
It's pretty surreal. Obviously, as time goes on, you know, you just become more of just teammates instead of being, you know, in awe of being around him. But I still remember the first couple of days being around him. It was pretty cool just to see one of your favorite players. Then obviously to be able to play alongside him is a pretty special thing for me. And, you know, he was somebody I looked up to before I got to school, and then even more so when I got to North Dakota. And, obviously now being able to play alongside him, it's pretty cool. And he's been a great role model and great teammate towards me. So it's been a pretty special thing for me.
Does he call you kid?
No, he calls me Kaji, which is you know, my nickname from school, and most guys in Chicago call me Jules, but he kept the North Dakota tradition, and he calls me Kaji like everyone else at school did.
You know, it's been, Drake, about, I don't know, 15 months or so since you first walked into the Blackhawks dressing room as a member of the team after being traded, and I've heard from a lot of young players that first moment when they look around and they see all those guys, and obviously a few have left over the years, but you look around and you see Jonathan Toews, with whom you were already obviously quite familiar, and Patrick Kane and Duncan Keith, and that it's a little bit overwhelming at first. Did you have that sensation?
Yeah, I think my first day walking into the locker room and, you know, seeing those guys and being on the same team with them and skating with them in practice, the first couple of days I was like wide-eyed and in awe and shock and just almost just excited just to be around them, and felt kind of like a kid in a candy store. And then, you know, obviously as your time goes on, you understand, you know, they're just teammates and they're just regular people like you and I, and, you know, it's fun to build relationships with them and, you know, share some stories and talk about, you know, their cup runs and stuff like that. And obviously, you know, when you're playing with them or whatever, you want to, you know, hold yourself to a higher standard and perform at a level that, you know, I think that they would accept. And, you know, I think it makes for a good culture in the locker room.
You've had a full season now just about with the Blackhawks. You will as this season comes to an end. Do you feel acclimated now? Do you feel like you're going to be here for the long run?
Yeah, I hope so. You know, I really, really enjoy being part of this organization, and being part of the Blackhawks is a pretty special thing. And, you know, I hope I could be here as long as possible. It's a great place to play. It's a great organization. And I feel like there's a good spot for me here. And, you know, I'd love to be here for as long as I can, but sometimes in hockey it doesn't work out that way. But, you know, like I said, I'd love to be here for as long as I possibly can.
North Dakota's hockey program, known as one of the best in the country, has produced an enormous number of NHL standouts. What did they have in the water there in North Dakota, Drake?
Nothing special, but there's not much else to do there other than play hockey. So I think a lot of guys are, pretty dialed in and at the rink playing hockey, thinking hockey, talking hockey all day, every day. And everyone there just wants to win, and everyone wants to move on to the next level. And it's a pretty special culture there at that school. Everyone wants to be a professional, and they treat you like professionals while you're there. And winning is probably one of the most important things, but developing players is probably a 1A or 1B alongside that. And that the university does a great job of building pros and moving guys on to the next level.
There are obviously various paths to the National Hockey League. You took the college route. Some guys come up through the juniors and eventually get their chance in the NHL. Do you feel like the way you went was the best thing for you as you look back on it?
Yeah, it's hard to say, because I obviously didn't play in the OHL. I had the opportunity to, but I chose to go to school instead, and I think obviously it worked out. I made it to the NHL, and I'm playing in the NHL, so I obviously can't say that there is anything wrong with the decision that I made. But I think just going to school was gave me a little bit more time to develop and grow as a player and as a person, and allowed me to put on extra weight and gave me just a little bit extra time to develop. And I wouldn't really say I was a high-end talent, but it allowed me to develop into the player I am today, and a bit of a late bloomer. So I think going to the college route gave me that extra time I needed to be the player I am now. And I'm very very beneficiary of a good school.
Drake Cajula, great talking to you this morning. Drake, continued success. Now kids want your autograph picture.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how it comes full circle like that. I was a kid that was hanging around NHL player practices and asking for autographs, and now you see the kids and stuff that at our practices and games, and it's pretty cool how it comes full circle like that.
How about that? All right, let's get some wins to end the season here.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
There you go, Drake Cajula. Sounds like a very personable young man. What is he, 25, Dave?
25, I think. Yeah, I came over in a trade from Edmonton late in 2018, and this is his first full season with the Blackhawks, and I think he's kind of found a home here.
Well, I hope he sticks around.
Yeah,
you're a busy boy. You've got a basketball game tonight, right?
Yes, the Illini are in town.
Woo-hoo!
To take on the Mayor, really? Take on the Wildcats at Welsh Ryan Arena. I'm interested to see what happens. These teams generally, they're usually close games. The game in Champaign last month was close. We'll see what happens. Cats are on a long losing streak. Illinois had a losing streak. Now they've come back with a couple of wins here. We'll see how they do tonight. So that game is at 6:45, and we'll carry that because the Hawks playing here will be on AM 1000 tonight. And, of course, on the WGN radio app.
So that doesn't mean that you're off tomorrow morning, does it?
I will be here tomorrow morning.
What a trooper you are.
I'm not traveling. I mean, I'm traveling to Evanston. I can handle
traffic
that.
Can sometimes be problematic.
Well, that's true. That's a good point.
I'll
have to let you know on that, Bob.
You may want to point that out to management. A follow-up to a couple of things we were talking about a little while ago. First of all, Lee Phillip and her husband, Bill Bell, not only did The Bold and the Beautiful, but they first did The Young and the Restless together and then spun off for that Bold and the Beautiful. We were talking about Lee Phillip, who passed away in Los Angeles at the age of 91. And we were talking about the ABC solicitation for people 65 and older for a new version of The Bachelor. And apparently, according to a texter from 630, we sounded like, well, I don't know who this is directed to. Probably you, Dave, and me. You do know you're sounding a bit like grumpy old men.
Yes, boys.
Well, I don't see it that way. I mean, I think we're kind of being compassionate. I don't want to see people get their heart broken on TV in their golden years. I'm sorry. If it sounds grumpy, so be it.
From 773, I hear the senior hot tub bubble bathing scene will be accompanied by Lawrence Welk music.
That's mean. Look at the music we listen to. I mean, come on. You still listen to the Stones and stuff like that, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
I like this. I like 60s music. That's kind of my favorite decade for music. I played the music from the 70s, so I got sick of all of that.
Yeah.
Because I had to play it so much.
They're not going to be Lawrence Welk. Oh, brother.
From the 219 area code, you know that Cialis and Viagra are lining up to be the main sponsor of that show, don't you?
There will be many drugs involved, I'm sure.
And this is what I say and what I think, confirming this from the 847 area code, this text. We have a friend whose daughter was on The Bachelor. The daughter said it is totally scripted, rehearsals, takes, and retakes. That's Dan who told us that. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's how they do reality television. The news will be coming up in less than 10 minutes from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I am very, very happy today. I'm feeling very proud. I'm feeling very honored. And I'll tell you why. I mentioned a little while ago that as I was flipping around, I happened upon Showtime's rerun of the Ron Howard-directed documentary film, Pavarotti. And I'm not an opera fan, although I covered one of Pavarotti's appearances once here in Chicago when I was working for Channel 2. And I remember that they made a big point of telling us, he's not doing any interviews. Maybe you'll be able to do some video of one of his rehearsal scenes, but that's it. So no interviews. So I was there with the camera crew from Channel 2. And then as Pavarotti came into, where was it? Maybe the Lyric Opera House. And as he came in, he was about 5 or 6 feet from me. And so I had the camera guy turn it on, and I just said, Luciano, hey, how you doing? And I thought, well, maybe he'll think I'm a friend of his, and he should respond. And then, sure enough, it worked. He did. He said hi, came over, talked for a couple of seconds. Bill and Walter were very happy with me that day. anyway, I watched this, and I really got sucked into it. It was tremendous. Ron Howard is so great as a director. I still watch Apollo 13 whenever it plays. His films are awesome, always. Anyway, so after I saw this, I tweeted and did the, you know, what is that, reply or something. I replied to some Ron Howard tweet so he would, you know, get my tweet if he looked. Anyway, so what I tweeted to at Real Ron Howard was, just watched your Pavarotti documentary. I'm not an opera fan, at least I didn't think I was, but I feel like I just experienced the great man's life firsthand. Bravo, Ron. It's as though I was experiencing what the central character in a dramatic and emotional opera feels. And you know what? He responded. Ron Howard responded. Let's see what he said here. I'll tell you what he said. He said, he tweeted back to me, many thanks. I'm so happy you connected with at Pavarotti Film. How about that?
Wow.
Ron Howard and yours truly, you know, we're buddies now.
Could have tagged your coworkers in the tweet.
Oh, I forgot. I'm not sure how that works. It took me about 20 minutes to figure out how to try to send a message to Ron Howard. So I just went to one of his tweets, and then I responded to it. At least I think that's what I did. But, hey, he saw it. I'm walking on air today.
Or his people did, Bob.
Oh.
Sorry.
You had to ruin it for me, didn't you? On the sports scene today, a couple of things I wanted to mention. First of all, Luis Robert, this highly touted rookie with the White Sox. Is this his first year in the big leagues?
This will be, yes.
He slid head first on a triple against the Giants on Tuesday, and He's got a history of hand and thumb injuries. Yeah. So why is the guy sliding head first?
That's a great question.
And don't you hope that Renteria says to him, don't do that ever.
I think,
certainly not in spring training.
No. I think these are all teachable moments for Rick Renteria and the coaching staff.
Boy, that is crazy.
Plus you get concussed, don't you, once in a while?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can.
Yeah,
but
you
he
run
does,
into somebody's foot or
but
leg.
He has spent some time on the DL with very thumb injuries. And, yeah, you got to be – he is such a talent. You've got to be careful. But he's a great athlete. And
well, and those guys, they kind of don't have a middle switch or an off switch. You know, it seems like they just go full blast or they don't. But there's no middle.
Right, but at some point – like 10 years from now, it's spring trading. I think he does find that middle switch, hopefully.
Oh, yeah, 10 years from now, he'll say, you know what, I don't feel right. I'll take about a week off here in spring trading.
Mm-hmm.
Guys still slide headfirst into first base.
You see it, yeah.
And does that actually pick up a step? It seems like it takes more. Well, you could avoid a tag, I guess, but you're not really getting to first base quicker that way, are you?
I think it's a very high-risk gamble. I mean, I think it's, yeah, you might gain a little speed, but you're also increasing the risk-reward, in my mind, kind of outweighs whatever time you get. I think the first player I remember really doing it on a consistent basis, remember Chet Lemon
for
the White Sox.
Yeah.
And he always used to slide head first, and everyone would be saying, don't do that. You're going to get hurt. And I mean, now guys do it on a pretty regular basis. But I just it just makes me cringe when I see it, because you get your hand stepped on and spiked, or you jam it on the base. So many things can go wrong there.
Here's what Renteria said about Luis Robert sliding headfirst in spring training. I always hold my breath a little bit on a headfirst slide. We work and talk about sliding with your feet, but anytime you start trying to take away what comes naturally to a player, it could throw things off, and you're looking at something else that might happen. No. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, the other things that are going to happen is, well, you might be out. Or
yeah, right. You know, well, would that be horrible? A spring training game, you make an out.
Yeah, that could happen either way.
Yeah. And then as far as the Cubs are concerned, what caught my eye was the report that Jason Kipnis might make the team. He's, of course, a Northbrook kid, a non-roster player, I guess, this spring. But he could be the second baseman this year, I guess.
Well, second base is available. And, you know, they're going to look at some different guys at that position. But, I mean, why not? This guy's been an all-star with Cleveland, and the chance to play for the Cubs might be the kind of thing that sort of gives him that late career boost. And he's not that old either.
You know, why did Cleveland give up on him? He was injured last year,
He's had some injuries, but, you know, he was part of the World Series team there.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Nico Hoerner looked pretty good last year.
He did when he came up.
He could be the second baseman as well.
He's
right?
Going to be in the mix there, you would think, and he'll get a look. I mean, he had a spectacular debut last year.
Yes, he did.
But
and that's impressive. You bring up a kid and you're in the thick of it, and the pressure's on, and then you deliver. Although, As Albert Almora found out, eventually they find out what your weakness is. That's why you get a lot of, you know, hot shots come up and then they disappear, because unless you can adjust to the adjustments that the pitchers make, and Almora says he's done that now, unless you can do that, you're not going to have long-term success.
Well, you might, you know, second time around, once the pitchers see you, then things can go south. And you might need a little more time in the minors. But
That's why I used to love Greg Maddux. You know, when he wasn't pitching, you just look at him sitting in the dugout with those glasses on and either taking written notes or mental notes, the professor.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was the secret to his success, wasn't it? He didn't exactly have a blazing fastball.
He was cerebral.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, you find a lot of guys who – maybe, you know, Kyle Hendricks may be that way.
Yeah, he is. And that's why Zambora Even though he had success for a while, I always knew this guy.
Carlos
Zambora.
Zambrano.
I'm sorry, Zambrano.
Yeah.
I knew that he would not have long-term success because no pitcher with that attitude, that mental state, ever has long-term success. I mean, you can't be a nut and be successful unless you're in broadcasting. 7:09, here's a little more on that coronavirus patient in California. Report just out in the New York Times, doctors suspected an infection with the virus, but the patient did not fit the federal criteria for testing. The patient had to wait days to be tested because of restrictive federal criteria. Despite doctors' suggestions, the patient who has tested positive may be the first person to be infected through community spread in the United States, according to the CDC. Doctors at the University of California Davis Medical Center considered the coronavirus a possible diagnosis when the person was first admitted last week. So I guess they just confirmed that it is the coronavirus.
Yeah,
in this
patient. It is coronavirus. And when they say the community spread of this, they mean they have they're still tracing, but they have no idea how this person contracted it. There's no travel to China. There was no travel to any of the other impacted countries. There was no exposure to another coronavirus patient. So that's one of those concerning cases that they're still looking into. But there are a couple of those cases in Italy that are very concerning as well. As a matter of fact, there was an entire cluster of those cases that was reported in Italy where the people have had no contact with the Chinese or have not traveled outside of that area. So that's very concerning.
The CDC has restricted testing to patients who either traveled to China recently or who know they had contact with someone infected with the coronavirus. This patient in California was transferred to the medical center from another hospital in Northern California with a suspected viral infection and was already on a ventilator upon arrival.
It's one of those cases where you have to ask, why don't we expand that testing now to anybody who perhaps has these symptoms, and maybe that'll happen.
Yeah, I think it should now. Yeah.
And there's another concerning story this morning out of New York about coronavirus that's just coming in. Apparently, there's some loophole in coronavirus screenings at New York's JFK Airport, where they have not been screening people who are arriving from Italy, specifically from areas where the outbreak has happened there.
How could they miss that?
Yeah, the story says that the screening has only been on flights from China. Those were generally stopped. They're still trying to figure out exactly why the customs had no special screening set up for these Italian flights. Whether that's the case at other airports where flights are coming in from Italy, we don't know. But that's something that we'll be following very closely through the day as well.
Scary stuff.
Yeah.
And remember what our infectious disease expert said yesterday about hand sanitizer. Make sure, what is it, 70% ethanol?
70% or more ethanol, which is, I was looking yesterday because I wanted to get a crate of this stuff just in case.
Yeah, a crate.
And
bathe in it.
You're right. So, but all of the ones that I looked at, all of the different brands had 70% listed on the back of them.
Yeah,
so
I had everybody checking as well yesterday, and somebody had 69%.
No, not enough. Nope. Not enough.
It's kind of weird.
All right, in the meantime, remember, wash your hands, and they say 20 seconds. Spend 20 seconds washing your hands, minimum. Use knuckles to press elevator buttons, fist bumps instead of shaking hands now. And if you're traveling, if you're flying and you're in an airplane bathroom, when you're using the sink to turn the water on, try to use your foot. But you better stretch before you do that so you don't pull your hamstring.
We're going to have injuries now.
So, that may be hard to do. We'll get to our extremely local news report from Block Club Chicago and Jen Sabella. I did not realize that the pepper and egg sandwich is a Chicago thing, like Italian beef. I thought pepper and egg sandwiches are popular everywhere. Apparently not. Jen's going to talk about this. She's coming in the studio now, and I'm very disappointed that I don't see a bag of pepper and egg sandwiches for us, Jen.
Those are the best.
That's one of my favorites, and I think you can get them at the Billy Goat, can't you? I know I've gotten egg sandwiches down there, and I would think especially for now they would have pepper and egg sandwiches. But you did a little research on this, Jen, and what did you find out about the history of this pepper and egg?
So,
oh, let me turn on your mic.
Oh,
there you go.
Sorry.
I wasn't going to turn your microphone because you didn't bring us a sandwich, but go ahead.
Now, Seamus was so excited about this, he went and made one at home last night.
Oh, your boss
yeah.
did. Okay, that's
not
nice.
Not my boss, my colleague. But
your
yes,
colleague.
So pepper and egg sandwiches, it's kind of like one of those things where Chicagoans say they invented it. Italian Americans who came here in the late 19th century, early 20th century, this is when, during Lent, Catholics were not allowed to eat meat, period. And then after 1965, it switched to you only can't eat meat on Fridays. But during that Lenten period, they were like, all right, what are we going to eat? Can't eat meat. And they would make these pepper and egg sandwiches. Fiore's, which is on Erie in Westtown, the owner of Fiore's says that they were the first to put together the peppers with the eggs on the French bread, on the Italian bread, I should say.
Yeah,
I'm going to be banished from my people.
who is the first?
Fiore's. It's a deli in Westtown. Michael Fiore, he's for decades run Fiore's Delicatessen. It's a family business on Erie and Oakley. And he said that for more than 40 years, they've been serving it. And he says they were the first, I know that this will be challenged.
The first in the country?
Yes.
Wow.
To roast the peppers in this way and put it together. So yeah, he says that they're selling them year round. Actually, you guys were talking about the Billy Goat. My wife is vegetarian, so that is like the only thing she can eat at the Billy Goat.
the egg sandwich?
Exactly. Uh-huh. So it is there.
It's good. And you can throw on the onions and the relish and all that
stuff. Exactly. I always like to throw
the
a bunch
pickles.
Of hot sauce on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, it's still a thing. And during Lent, it's still a hit in Chicago. There's a bunch of places that sell it. If you go to our website, blackclubchicago.org, we have a little bit more of the history. And some other locations, Gio's Cafe and Deli in Bridgeport, they are also, they have a very popular pepper and egg sandwich.
So does Portillo's.
Oh, yes.
Forget them. I want to go to that place that allegedly started it.
Fiore's, yes. It's good in general. They have really nice bread. It's a nice little spot in Westtown. There's a lot of little Italian bakeries over there.
In Westtown, do you have the address of that place?
It is, I think she has the intersection here, which is at Erie and Oakley. On the corner.
Oh, okay. So it's right in the heart of, is that the Italian town that people say is the real Little Italy?
So there's a couple
compared
real little,
to Taylor Street.
Yeah, there's one out west on Harlem that they're actually, we have working on a story about that right now, about they're rebranding some of that to be more of a Little Italy. So there's some competing Little Italies in Chicago.
Oakley seems to be
Oakley, yes,
the
for
oldest,
sure.
right?
Yes,
yeah.
for sure.
Okay, we have some other restaurant news here in Portage Park. What's going on there?
So this was a kind of a crazy story. So I'm in a lot of Northwest Side Facebook groups just by the nature of my job, and I saw a lot of people promoting this new restaurant called El Viejon. It just opened at 5700 West Irving Park Road, but it is now closed for 30 days. It took over a Greek restaurant called Veranda at the location, and apparently there was some miscommunication, and the new owner thought that he could just pick up the Greek restaurant's liquor licenses and other licenses to operate. So they had an opening night party, and a huge fight broke out, and neighbors are not happy. The police were called, and they were like, what is this place? We didn't hear about this. Usually, you know, neighborhoods have to get a heads up before a new music venue or a new bar opens in their neighborhood. So it turned out it was a miscommunication, according to the alderman. The owner of the business, this could have gone very bad for the owner of the business, and the alderman could have just shut it down. But the owner owns a few other restaurants, one in Little Village and one actually in Tulsa. And the one in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is like wildly popular. It's like a Mexican seafood restaurant. Has rave reviews. It's award winning. So I think the Alderman Spisato said, you know, this was a big mistake. but let's work with this guy. Maybe bring this restaurant to the neighborhood.
You know, you don't want to have fisticuffs at your opening bash.
Exactly, exactly. So he kind of blamed it on, you know, it was a friends and family opening. Some people just got a little rowdy. This won't be the normal.
Friends and family and bullies.
Exactly.
And let's give a shout out to a cafe that's doing something good, something nice.
So this is a story we're covering really closely. We'll have more on it today. Kenny Petrimos, he was a barista at Step Down Cafe in Pilsen. One of our reporters regularly would see him at the cafe. He would actually keep the cafe open late when our reporter was working on a story there. A very sweet kid. He was stabbed to death at Richard's Bar in River West over the weekend. And there's a lot going on with that. We'll see if charges are filed. The offender was in custody and subsequently released. But we are following the story, and the cafe is now having a fundraiser tonight for the family of Kenny from 7:30 a.m., actually all day today, to 5 p.m. All proceeds from Step Down Cafe will go to the family who are now suddenly planning funeral services for their 23-year-old son. Step Down Cafe is at 2023 South Racine in Pilsen. It's a great little spot. We've Block Club. We've had some staff meetings there just when we like to go into the neighborhoods and meet with people. And it's a really tragic story, and we've been following it closely.
Step Down Cafe, they're open until when, did you say?
5 p.m. So 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Breakfast sandwiches, you know, coffee, lunch. You can find all that there.
I hope that's a huge success. 2023 South Racine. What a horrible story. And Richard's, very popular place just down the street there from La Scarola. A lot of people know Richard's.
Yes. So we actually talked to Alderman Burnett yesterday a little bit about this. You know, he pushed for the shutdown of Funky Buddha Lounge, which is right down the street as well, and some other bars in that area after violence broke out. So he's under some pressure right now to question what happened at Richard's. And we've sent reporters there 3 days in a row. It's been radio silence from anyone in the area. It's like no comment. So we're waiting on more from police today, and just stay tuned, and Block Club's on it. We have like three reporters on the story right now.
As I understand it, there has not been trouble at Richard's in the past.
It's a pretty interesting place. So it's a smoking bar. It is still, people still smoke at Richard's. It's been kind of notorious that they just have floated the smoking ban for all of these years.
Yeah, it's been a friendly sort of throwback old school hangout, right, hasn't it?
Right. So that's the, you know, the rumor. But you know, why do they get away with smoking when this smoking is banned? We don't know. Chicago's an interesting place, so yes, we're on it.
It's an interesting place, to say the least. And finally, Logan Square, is this about gentrification?
It is. So it's actually a follow-up. We did a big story on invisible evictions in Logan Square, because it's a lot of people who are just basically tossed out of their apartments when the building sells, which is happening like a lot in Logan as the neighborhood gentrifies. But we heard from a lot of small landlords after we ran that story saying, hey guys, like, it's not, we are often demonized by people, you know, in the media, but we can't afford to keep these buildings. Like, the property taxes, actually, in our main photo on our website, one of the landlords holds up her property tax bill, which doubled in 1 year. Mm. And she's like, it's impossible not to pass this down to the tenants. And, you know, when they can't afford it, we do our best. But it is a rapid, you know, to double your property taxes in 1 year, that's a lot of money really quickly. So a lot of tenants can't afford that, and the landlords are saying, we can't afford it either. And so a lot of these big real estate firms are coming in and buying up buildings and got rehabbing them and then charging more. But the small landlords are saying, you know, we can't afford to keep our buildings here anymore. These were investment properties for us. We wanted to keep them, you know, they wanted to keep the architectural integrity of the buildings, in a lot of cases, the original woodwork, but they aren't able to hang on to them. So it's a bigger issue than just, you know, tenants being priced out. Landlords are saying, we're feeling the squeeze as well.
Are a lot of landlords raising rents?
They are. And the ones we talked to said, you know, we try to be really, you know, thoughtful. We try to be accommodating to our tenants and do it in a, you know, gradual way. But when your property taxes go from, in the case of the woman in our main photo on our website, $3,000 to like almost $7,000 in 1 year, it's a lot. So she said, you know, I didn't hike it up that much, but if I want to keep this building long term, it's going to be hard for her not to.
And a lot of those folks don't want to sell.
Right.
They just want to stay there.
Exactly.
And they can't. They can't afford to.
Exactly. So this, like, they bought these buildings when they were cheap, and they hoped it would be an investment property. I know one of the landlords we talked to, she's like, my kids are teenagers, but I hoped when they went to college in the city or something, they could live in these buildings. But it's just not. It's not tenable right now. It's tough for them to hold on to them. So they're calling on, you know, the city needs to come up with better policies to protect, you know, both landlords and tenants here, and to maintain affordable housing when these neighborhoods explode in popularity.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, it's not fair. Some of these pioneering people came in the neighborhood, helped make it what it is today, and then they're priced out. On the other hand, it's nice to see a neighborhood getting better. So
right.
It's a complicated story.
Right, exactly. We could go on forever about gentrification, and that's why we try to look at it every day at Block Club from every angle and really talk to the people in the neighborhoods, from the business owners to the renters to the owners of the buildings, to get their perspective, because it is complicated.
More at blockclubchicago.org and here on the radio when we check in with Jen Sabella and colleagues from Block Club Chicago with extremely local news. Thank you, Jen.
Thanks, Bob.
And talk to you folks tomorrow. That's it from around the block. Now we'll get to what's happening around the world. Let's open up the Department of Corrections. And thank you to the text from 847. Irian Oakley is in Ukrainian Village. Come on, Bob, you know that. Yes, I do. Thank you. Morning brain. Apologize. And I knew our pepper and egg sandwich discussion would start this. People weighing in with their best pepper and egg sandwich locations. Johnny's in Elmwood Park got a few votes. Jay texted us. I used to buy pepper and egg sandwich at Jay's restaurant near Montrose in Narragansett. And from Annette, my parents owned a restaurant in Franklin Park called Armando's in the late 60s and early 70s. We made pepper and egg sandwiches back then. So the Chicago sandwich controversy rages on. 7:40 right now. A Chicago preservation group yesterday released its annual list of buildings or areas the group considers most at risk of demolition. And let's see, they named 7 most endangered places for 2020, the most endangered city buildings. And on the list is in Jackson Park, the South Shore Cultural Center. They say the construction of the Obama Presidential Center and the consolidation of two existing golf courses could lead to the removal of trees. That has landed that site on the most endangered list for the fourth time. The Central Manufacturing District on Pershing Road, which began to take form in 1902, is on the list. That's where the construction of the U.S. Leather Company building on Morgan. And let's see, it was expanded west along Pershing, ultimately covering more than 250 acres. Sheathed in red brick, terracotta, and limestone, the district's buildings were constructed in a variety of architectural styles. And during the district's peak, more than 200 companies from Wrigley to Goodyear to Westinghouse occupied those buildings. And now with many of them vacant, Preservation Chicago says many of the structurally sound buildings face the threat of demolition and alterations unless the city of Chicago designates it as a landmark district. Part of the district already is on the National Register of Historic Places. Also on the list, the Union Station Powerhouse. Amtrak, which owns that building, has plans to demolish the structure on the Chicago River at 301 West Taylor to make room for a new maintenance shed, according to Preservation Chicago. Then there is the Chicago Town and Tennis Club in Westtown, 3.5 acres. That was recently sold for $7.5 million to Misericordia. The company plans to demolish that historic building and construct a residential building. Preservation Chicago also put the Washington Park National Bank on their list of endangered buildings. That's at 63rd and Cottage Grove in the West Woodlawn neighborhood. That building made the list for the second time. Roseland, Michigan Avenue Commercial District on the list on Michigan Avenue between 107th and 115th. The historic buildings along that strip are in fair or poor condition. Preservation Chicago says a lack of financial investment in the upkeep of the properties is the biggest threat to that corridor. And finally on the list, the Thompson Center. The group is concerned about the potential sale of the Loop office building designed by Helmut Jahn and important in establishing the Chicago-based German-American architect's reputation. Preservation Chicago says the potential loss or destruction of the Thompson Center would also be a huge embarrassment to both the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois, as this building is well documented, published, and recognized as a landmark in many architectural circles. State officials said they don't care what the new owner does with the building. That should not be on the list of the city's most endangered city buildings. That building should be torn down. The building itself is very cool, but it doesn't fit in there with all the old, historic, classic-looking, great downtown buildings that are around it. I've said this before. It looks like a spaceship landed in the middle of the area, and it doesn't fit. So I don't want that on the list of endangered city buildings because I want that to go away. So hopefully, and nobody knows what's going to happen to it yet, but hopefully somebody will turn it into something else that looks more like it fits with the great downtown architecture of Chicago. And I am Len O'Connor. We check in with social media and engagement manager and investment news, Scott Kleinberg. And we're talking about a new survey from Nielsen about streaming services and the habits of TV viewers these days. This was a special edition of Nielsen Total Audience Report. And this told us, Scott, that we are spending nearly one-fifth of our TV time streaming content. That's 19%, and that's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It basically means that anybody who has a internet capable device, whether it be a phone or, you know, an Apple TV or Chrome, whatever it is, that of the time we're watching TV, 19% of that time is watched using streaming services. It is definitely surprising because it was about 10% the last time this survey was done 2 years ago. So quite an increase.
And it's exploded so quickly. What are some other numbers that came out of this survey that struck you?
Well, let's see. 60% of Americans subscribe to more than one paid streaming service. So that's very telling. This one really, really kind of shocks me. 93% say that they'll either increase the amount of service they have or keep the streaming services that they have. So there's definitely, if you're the cable company, you're definitely worried right now because people are really enjoying the streaming, whether it's for the content that they offer or for the convenience.
Yeah, content, convenience. So what else determines whether someone subscribes? Because there's a couple of important factors here.
Yeah. A lot of it has to do two main things, price and variety of content. It has to be a fair cost, because when you hear people, I'm sure when you hear people who are talking about switching to streaming, they're saying, oh, I don't want to pay another cable bill. So they're looking to save money. But at the same time, they don't want to save money and they don't want to have, you know, nothing to watch. So between a fair price and variety of content, you know, that has to be the most important thing. And there's so many different services out there. So, you know, it's not necessarily whether or not you're going to find something. It's going to be able to, you know, can you find the thing you want to find that's most important to you?
Can you come over to my house and show me how to get Apple Plus? I cannot figure it out. I thought on my new smart TV it would be easy, but apparently it's not.
We'll make an appointment, and I'll sit down with you and go over all your Apple stuff. It's no problem.
Okay, good. There's too much, right? I mean, it's impossible, and it would get very expensive to have all of them. And it seems like every week there's an announcement of a new one.
Yeah, it's really true. The thing that strikes me about that question is I think it really depends on who you are. You know, cable companies for the longest time, you know, they'll charge you $150, $200 a month, and they'll give you 700, 800 channels. I've never watched all 700 or 800 channels. I don't think anybody has. But if you have a streaming service, or let's say, for example, you have 5 or 10 streaming services, and each one of those services costs $10, $15, and each one has so much content on there that that's what you want to watch, so if you ended up paying similar to cable or a little bit less, but you had so much more to watch, that may be, you know, much better for you. So I think it depends. I think most people have one, two, maybe three services. They're looking for the things that are really, really interesting to them. And then they're going from there. So, you know, there's always a possibility because they're saying 93% will either increase or keep. You know, maybe there's a new service that comes out that people want to keep and, you know, see what it has to offer them.
And how do you get the right information? I mean, do I have this right? Like Hulu, some of it's free, some of it has commercials. Then if you pay extra, there's a service of Hulu without commercials. Then there's another one that costs more that's Hulu Plus.
Yeah. There's all different kinds. There's kinds that are called ad-supported. Ad-supported are usually free, but those are the ones, you know, it's like when you buy an app on your phone. It's like if you pay $1.99, you don't have the ad, but people like to do that. So there's ad-supported, there's the kinds that don't have ads, and you're right, there's Plus, but then there's some services now that are offering live TV. Hulu does that. So, you know, it really, there's all different segments and all different varieties. So they're trying to find one that's going to matter to most people. For the people who want to cut the cord, get rid of cable and spend nothing, ad support's great because then, you know, you don't have to pay for the content. But then you're going to get tired of all the commercials, so you're probably going to switch. So, you know, it becomes very much like cable where you have all of these different choices so you find the one that's right for you.
People are really buzzing now about HBO Max because they're going to have the Friends reunion.
Yeah, and that's a perfect example. You know, that's a brand new service that hasn't launched yet. They're going to launch it with this, you know, this Friends reunion, which people who are fans have been waiting 25 years for it to actually happen, you know. And basically they're saying you have to subscribe to this brand new service to get this show. And for a lot of people, that's going to be enough. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to do it. But not only that, they're also bringing all of the Friends original 250 plus episodes along with it. So right there out of the gate, they probably have the content thing all set up.
So for now, unless you really like Friends, no need to subscribe to HBO Max. But I imagine they'll be bringing some other programming on board with all the attention they're going to get.
Well, yes, there'll be that. There'll be all of, no, I don't know about all, but there'll probably be a lot of the HBO content that a lot of people like. And then at the same time, HBO is doing this thing saying that it's programmed or curated by humans. And that's kind of an inside baseball dig at Netflix, which likes to say that it uses very advanced algorithms to figure out what you want to watch. Well, HBO's like, you know what? Computers can't figure out what I want to watch, but maybe humans can. Mm-hmm. So they're going along with that to try to get people interested. And plus, they also have the brand recognition of being HBO. So that's not going to be a problem for them.
So the bottom line here is we have much more control over what's on, what we're going to watch, and streaming services are taking advantage of that. But it can get confusing, though, can't it?
It can definitely get confusing. There's so much out there, you know, like we were saying before, you know, there's Amazon, there's Apple TV, there's original content, there's old content. There's just so much stuff. And there was something that was in the news yesterday where Apple's Tim Cook said that for Apple TV, there was never a question of whether or not they would bid to get the rights for Friends because they want everything to be new content. So the interesting thing about them is they're kind of far down in the ratings in terms of how they're doing. And most people say that's because it's just new content. People seem to really want a mixture of new and old. So when you think about what is going to end up being king for the price, I think HBO is going to do pretty well because it's going to have a good mix of both.
So what's your choice, Scott, cable or streaming?
You know, it's funny. I had cable for the longest time, and last month we cut the cord, switched over to streaming. Right now, I'm doing Amazon Prime and Apple TV because I want to have a little bit of both, a little bit of, you know, new and old. And so far, I like it. I like the fact that I don't have $150 bills. Yeah. I like the fact that I get to choose the things that are really interesting to me. And like those other, you know, 93%, if I see something that I really like, I'll add another service. And, you know, maybe it'll be HBO Max. You know, the Friends thing is definitely interesting.
You don't miss anything?
You know, no. I really don't. You can get everything that you really need. Well, I think what I miss, and this is not really, really fair, is that channel where you can see all the different 700, 800 channels, because you feel important when you have all these channels, but you know you're never going to watch them, so it's like, I can live without that.
Yeah, I don't know. I miss my channel surfing. Scott Kleinberg, social media and engagement manager and investment news. Very interesting stuff. Thanks as always, Scott.
Thank you, Bob. Take care.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. It's 8:10, time to say good morning to Dean Richards. Dean, we've been talking about Lee Phillip, who passed away at the age of 91. And did you have much contact with her over the years?
I met her a couple of times at the Chicago Emmy Awards and, you know, things like that, where she had been honored a couple of times, too, for her amazing body of work here in Chicago and being such a pioneer in broadcasting in Chicago, certainly for women in broadcasting. She, if was not the very first, was one of the very first women in broadcasting to not only host her own show, but to produce her own show. I definitely remember growing up, you know, my mom would watch the Lee Phillip Show in Noon Break.
Yeah.
And, you know, the shows that she did that were such an interesting variety of topics that she would cover of, you know, serious subjects. All the A-list celebrities, you know, they'd stop by Wally Phillips, they'd stop by Lee Phillip.
That's right.
They would do, you know, the Irv Cups in it. You know, there was a certain pecking order, but Lee Phillips was one of them. I was watching a clip that's on YouTube this morning with Lee Phillip hosting James Garner and George Raft.
Wow.
In black and white. And in between, you know, she would sit down and talk with them, and then get up and do a live commercial for, you know, housewives may want to use this product to iron your clothes. I mean, it was,
yeah,
you know, like the great 1950s, 60s television.
Uh-huh.
Here's something that'll make your iced tea sweet and with no calories. And then she'd sit down and do a serious segment on the, you know, people with handicaps.
Yeah.
It was amazing. She was amazingly talented, amazingly poised.
First lady of Chicago TV.
First lady of Chicago TV, not to mention then, you know, retiring from Chicago TV and probably nationally best known for her and her husband, Bill Bell, not Bob Bell, Bozo, Bill Bell, who created Young and the Restless and Bold and the Beautiful.
Yeah, Lee Phillip. She was on Channel 2 for more than 30 years and was in Los Angeles and dying at the age of 91. I also wanted to mention, I don't know, Dean, whether you ever ran into her, because she was at NBC for more than 40 years. Anna Vassar passed away, a great writer and producer, really, really loved all the political stories, was part of Channel 5's election coverage and specials for many years. I had the privilege of working with her, and you always knew you were in good hands when she fixed your script and she was producing something you were doing.
Yeah.
And our thoughts are with her husband, Paul Nagaro, a great camera guy over at Channel 5 as well. All right, let's talk about a new exhibit at, where is this? At the DuSable.
DuSable Museum is where I was last night. It was the premiere, world premiere of this new exhibit, which is a virtual reality exhibit. You know, these kind of exhibits where you go in and you put on that sort of helmet, goggles kind of thing. And this exhibit takes you into the 1963 March on Washington with Dr. Martin Luther King, including being able to view in real time and in three dimensions his famous I Have a Dream speech. They premiered it last night, and among the people who were there last night, one of the producers and the person who narrated this exhibit is Oscar winner Viola Davis. She had just walked through the exhibit, experienced the exhibit, and then came out on the red carpet, and I talked to her.
I felt like I was set on fire. That's what I say. Set on fire. Because you're there. You experience it. You're not detached from it. You're not reading it in a book. You're not hearing it, you know, on a radio. You are there. You're looking in Dr. King's eyes. He's looking in your eyes. And so it becomes inescapable. That's right. What it becomes.
I don't even know if you're aware of this, that it's 3 years ago today that you won your Academy Award. And I'm wondering, what's life been like for you since 3 years ago today?
Well, doing a TV show, running around with my nine-year-old.
Pretty glamorous.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm so grateful that for that award. We have it in our office. But I have to say, I barely look at it. You know, after it's done, you know, I always say the three famous words are, and now what?
You got to move on. You got to keep going.
You know, your life is not about one award or one project, you know. So I've been moving with Juby Productions.
Right. We got a lot going
being
on.
Being a wife, a mom.
Right. Yeah, she was there with her husband last night, but also there last night, two of the children of Martin Luther King Jr., his daughter Bernice, and also Martin Luther King III.
I see it more not so much as honoring our dad, but giving young people an opportunity to learn more and be able to feel as if you are part of a movement that many young people would see as many, many years ago. It really wasn't that long ago.
Having this opportunity to bring it to life in a technological platform, to speak to people, to give them their hope, lift them up, and hopefully provide the impetus for reminding us of our need to continue to press toward being one nation.
What an honor to meet both of those. Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City was also there. I know you're up against the clock here and you have to take a break. I'm going to be running these full interviews on my Sunday show this coming week, Bob.
Have to get over there to the DuSable Museum.
It's really cool.
It sounds fantastic.
Really cool.
Thank you, Dean. With us this morning, the man behind Onesti Entertainment, Ron Onesti. I call him the Rich Millman of the entertainment business because you know how Rich opens up a restaurant every 11 seconds? Well, Ron, just in the time I have done this introduction, I think he's opened up another concert venue. Good morning, Ron. How you doing?
Mr. Surratt, it's so good to see you, my friend. And I'm so happy that Chicago's voice has landed on Chicago's radio station finally.
Well, you're very sweet to say that. All right, let's remind people about what you got going. And for those who don't know, let's see if I can remember. Okay, you run the Arcata Theater in St. Charles. All right. And you've got a relatively new place in Highwood, right?
Yes, it's called Club 210 of Highwood. And it's a music venue, restaurant. It's been there since 1946. It's a former bowling alley. And we've had it since about September. And it's just rocking and rolling over there.
And you've taken a former historic movie theater and transformed that as well, correct?
Well, we're working on that right now. It's the Displains Theater. And we're putting a speakeasy in there and a restaurant and with the city and Rivers Casino and the city of Des Plaines has been a tremendous partner with this whole project, putting in $8 million and really renovating it to make it the way it was back in 1927 when it first opened.
And then you've got, what's it called? The Ron Onesti World? What is that place called up there?
Well, you got my home address? Is that what you're looking for?
No.
It's called Wild West Town.
That's it.
It's
Wild West Town.
It's a 45-year-old amusement park that so many people grew up with. And we took it over last year and opened up a restaurant called Bebopalula's Rockabilly Cafe, focused on Elvis and Johnny Cash and Patsy Cline, and it's a great experience for families and kids, and we're opening up an actual music venue there as well.
Look at you, a kid from, was it Taylor Street?
Taylor Street, come on. But, you know, we moved a lot, let's just say that. Went from Taylor Street to Our Lady of the Angels Parish, and everybody knew about the fire back in 58. I mean, I wasn't there, but that neighborhood we moved to, and then Elmwood Park and Jefferson Park, I mean, just all over the place.
And I remember in a previous incarnation, many, many years ago, you provided uniforms for our various softball teams at Fox Thing in the Morning.
Well, that's how we met first.
That's right.
110 years ago or so.
All right. Well, let's talk about people coming to town, some acts that I think will interest people coming to the Arcata in St. Charles. What do you got going?
Well, so many. I mean, you know, when I'm so proud of for the most part is the variety we have there. In any one day, I mean, for example, we've got Gary Puckett and Union Gap and the Grassroots. We've got a great oldie show, but then we'll have Carrot Top, and then we'll have, you know, who's coming, and then Brett Michaels of Poison, and then we've got the cast from The Sopranos coming celebrating their 20th anniversary.
That's quite an array, yeah. Tell us more about the Sopranos event.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it because, you know, I've gotten to know many of those guys over the years, especially even James Gandolfini. We golfed together on several occasions, and actually was part of his we put together his going away ceremony in New Jersey with his family there, and it was so gut-wrenching and heart-wrenching, but it's officially one of those guys gone too soon.
What was he like?
You know, just, I mean, you hear all the interviews. I mean, they're all spot on. He was so not that celebrity. I mean, he was, but he didn't act that way. And he would stop filming. He would stop interviews just to take pictures with people. He gave so much, even financially. He paid off people's mortgages. He paid their bills. He gave them a $20 bill if they need. I mean, he was that kind of a guy. And he would just be so, he's, you know, the essence of the neighborhood guy. That's what he was. He'd walk up to, hey, how you guys doing? And just a great person.
So your Sopranos event is going to feature cast members from the show. What yes. goes on there?
Yeah, so we've got several. We've got Michael Imperioli, who played Christopher, the guy who played Bobby Bacala, Steve Sciarippa. And then, you know, Vince, I'm not going to talk about his character name, but he's going to be there, too. And, you know, what it's called
Big Cat.
Yeah, we'll call that Big Cat. Very good. I'm going to use that one, Bob. Thank you. But it's, you know, it's comedy and behind-the-scenes stories. And, you know, it's just really get to know these guys and how it was behind the scenes on the set of The Sopranos.
So for that event and for some of the music you've got going in St. Charles, how do people find out when and how to get tickets and so forth? What do they do?
Well, they can go to oshows.com. You know, it's our website. But we're really putting a lot of emphasis, especially on the Displains Theater. We just started the fan page. And if you want to, you know, be a part of all the news for Displains, get on the fan page there on the and then there's also some things that we're doing because this is the 100th anniversary of Prohibition. So between the Club Arcata Speakeasy and the other speakeasies we have, you got to check out what's going on there. That's a true experience.
When is Displains opening?
Well, we're looking, we're trying to do it for October. You know, late fall. And again, there's going to be restaurants there. We're actually in the Arcata Theater, too. We're opening up a steak and crab house inside there, a small hotel, hotel suites in there, a pizza experience, rock and roll pizza experience. A lot of stuff happening in the old world, Bob.
And so will the music acts at the Displains Theater be similar to what you've booked in St. Charles?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be that, you know, it's one of those situations where it's far enough and close enough where I can do a Friday night in St. Charles and a Saturday night in Displains sometimes, but you know, so many people on that part of the world has been looking for us to do it. So I'm very excited about what I can bring, what we're going to bring to the city of Des Plaines.
And what are you doing in Highwood?
So again, that's you know, it's been around forever. It used to be called 210 Live, and it's really like a mini House of Blues kind of thing. About 400 people fit in there, and I brought my meatballs and my recipes there. So we opened up the restaurant, and people are loving the food. And if you love to dance, that is the place to be. It's up there. Highland Park area, you know, right around Ravinia World, and people have been loving it. I mean, they're just every night dancing and singing and having a great time.
You know, some of these artists must appreciate the fact that there are venues like the Arcata and soon the Displains Theater to play in. It's just the right size for certain acts, isn't it?
You know what, Bob, what I've been really focusing on, if you know what I do, is basically 60s, 70s, and 80s, pretty much kind of what you focus on too. You know, we're kind of growing up through this stuff. And for that size venue is perfect for those types of acts, and they just love it. You know, it's amazing. Some of these, there's so many acts that are now their 50th anniversary, 60th anniversary, and they're playing like they're playing those arenas back in the day.
I know some of my favorite shows in recent years have been Arcata concerts. B.J. Thomas was
tremendous.
Oh, yeah,
I know you love B.J. He's coming back. B.J. Thomas.
And these people, you can tell, they really appreciate the audiences they get around here, don't they?
Oh, like
Midwest fans.
They, you know, because they're not shy. Our audience, they're not shy about showing the true love To these artists, and for the theater as well. I mean, we bring them back to their high school years, their college years, when things were simpler, but the music was great, and we bring them back to a place where they can really relive their memories.
Are you ever going to get Dion to perform here, Dion DiMucci?
You know, every year I talk to him a lot. I talk to him quite a bit, and he's like, he just hates to fly and doesn't want to come. You know, he'll do something in New York or in Florida, where he basically lives. But man, Dion DiMucci, are you kidding?
Yeah, you got to work on that.
I've been working on it there. I got Paul Anka coming back. We got a lot of great stuff, man.
All right, find out all about it. What is it, oshows.com?
The letter O, shows.com.
That's Ron Onesti, and just walking into the studio from the lobby, he opened up a new venue right by the elevators here at WGN.
It's called Cappuccino and Comedy. We do it every morning.
I'm not surprised. Always good to see you, Ron Onesti.
Best to Marianne, man.
Will do. Have a great day. Talk to you down the road. It is 8:29. We'll talk finance coming up after the 8:30 news. Let me check. I've been afraid to check on the markets. Well, actually, Mr. Grzanich in the newsroom will have an update shortly when they open. I was just looking at the futures. It does not look good for today. So stay away from high floors with windows that don't lock, okay? Turn down your volume control. David Hochberg is here. How you doing, David?
I'm great. Thanks, Bob.
Are you jumping out of windows because of what's happening with the stock market? Let's see. Right now, Dow Jones down 364, NASDAQ down 181. How are you feeling?
One man's pain is another man's opportunity, Bob. It's a great time to refinance. The bonds are collapsing. The yields are going down. What does that mean to your listeners? That interest rates are back into the threes. So it's a great time to take advantage of the world ending and get a low rate.
Well, what happens if this coronavirus gets worse here?
Well, it's going to impact the supply chain, which is going to impact workers, which is going to slow the economy down. Slowing the economy down is not good. The Fed might have to cut rates again, but it's freaking everybody out is what it's doing. It's a mental thing, because now you're seeing that your stock portfolio is now starting to lose money as opposed to it going up for the past 4 years on a runaway freight train. So the psychological aspect of the market going down is worrisome to a lot of people. It's worrisome to me, right? It's worrisome to the money I have in my kids' college funds, okay? So it's worried in my 401k. But listen, what happens is that when anytime you have this type of uncertainty in the market or a gigantic economic event, and this is, believe it or not, a major economic event, you have China basically shut down, okay? So when China, you have a country of all those people over there, billions and billions of people, shutting down because of this virus, which is, it's nothing to laugh at. I mean, it's very serious. We need to get out of it. But it's going to have a major impact on the market. It already is. Mm-hmm. Okay? The people are taking their money out of stocks and putting it into bonds. And anytime there's a huge flush of money into bonds, the bond traders don't have to pay as much for that money, which means the yield goes down because there's an oversupply. Yield goes down, mortgage rates go down, and we've seen an unbelievable dip in mortgage rates over the past 2 weeks.
As you know, the experts will always say these psychological factors can mean as much, if not more, than other hard numbers.
Sure. Well, it's the mindset of the consumer, right? The consumer drives the economy. Go back to 07, 08. We all saw what happened 07, 08 when everything collapsed. People stopped spending money. Okay, what did they do? They started paying down their debt. What have we done over the past 4 years? We've jacked up our debt. Okay, we have more debt now, $1.4 trillion worth of debt. It's crazy. And so we've gone absolutely the other way. So now everybody's overextended, and we've gotten more calls over the past 2 weeks for cash out refinances than we ever had. I was just talking to a lady in the green room, one of you of our listeners, $200,000 home, $125,000 mortgage, $40,000, $20,000 to $40,000 with the credit card debt, looking to take advantage of the low rates, pay off some debt because her values of properties in her areas have come back a little bit. It's the only way that she can pay off that debt and save some money.
By the way, what about all those offers you get in the mail to consolidate your credit card debt, put it all on one card?
Yeah, you have to be careful of that because there are one-year teaser rates typically. So it sounds great, and people, if you qualify for things like that, you put it on those credit cards, and then you have 12 months to pay it off. And then if you don't pay it off in that 365th day or 366th day, because we're in a leap year, whammo, here comes a freight train. You get back charged all of the interest. So
you end up losing money.
Well, it's great for the first 12 months. And then what you do is you play musical chairs or credit cards. And then you're like, okay, I got 10 months to go. I need to find that other credit card that's got a 0% offer so I can flip it out over there. Well, that's great. But back in 07, 08, what happened was they stopped offering those 0% credit card transfers and there was no place for them to go. So you start playing musical chairs and then all of a sudden, you know, your butt's looking for a chair and there's no chair. And then whammo, here comes the freight train. You get whacked with all that interest. So our listeners have to be careful as to what's going on out there.
But if you were having financial trouble now and knew, for example, that you were starting a new job in a year or less, then it would make sense to do one of those balance transfers, wouldn't it?
If you could pay it off in a year.
Yeah.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
If money was going to be coming in and you knew it.
Sure. I the listener that I was talking to as I was walking over here from the sales department to come in here, she quit her previous job, had another job set up to start this past Monday. On Friday, she gets a call from the company she was going to work for in like 72 hours. Oh, sorry, we eliminated that position. We don't have a job for you anymore. Okay, so that listener didn't do anything wrong. Right. She went from job A to job B that was going to be a better opportunity for her. And then she learned 72 to 96 hours before going to job B. Oh, by the way, we eliminated that position. Now she's got to start all over. This is a lady that has $20,000 to $40,000 worth of credit card debt we're looking to pay off.
We're talking with Homeside Financial's David Hochberg. All right, let's get to a mistake home buyers make, a common one when it comes to securing a low interest rate loan. What do they do?
Because we're getting into home buying season. I mean, we're hot and heavy into home buying season right now. I locked three home buyers into a loans yesterday that were out shopping. Everybody's like, oh, you know, it doesn't start till after the Super Bowl. These three buyers were out since December looking for homes. So forget about that whole theory. It doesn't happen till after the Super Bowl. They've been looking for 60 days, 90 days, finally found a home. The biggest mistake that our listeners make is that it's ready, fire, aim. They don't plan ahead. Okay, so we're in February. The marathon is in November, October. It's in October because it's always my wife's birthday, and which is in November. Sorry. No, 10, 9, 10, 10, 11.
Don't mess that up.
No, it's 10. It's in October, 10, 11. And so if you're thinking about running in a marathon, Bob, which I've never done and never will, you start training now, right? So what the biggest mistake our listeners make is that they know they're going to want to buy a home. They know that their kid is walking down or children are walking down the aisle to get their diploma in June. They're going to put their house in the market in July, and they're going to buy another house in August or September. Now is the time to plan and start getting your credit in shape, because that credit is the number one driving factor in determining the interest rate on your new loan.
Doesn't it sometimes take years to fix your credit report?
If you don't call me, it'll take you a longer time than if you call me. Okay, because I've got a guy by the name of Gary Novell. He's on our show, Home Sweet Home Chicago. He taught me everything I know about credit, okay? And what happens is if you go to Gary, okay, we'll pull your credit. We'll do a little search right now. We'll see what's going on. If there's a lot of things that need to be moved around, tax liens need to be removed, we'll send you over to Stephen A. Leahy to work on that, because there's a quick start program he could get you into that with the IRS. But if there's a lot of things on your credit report that you just don't have time or the knowledge to get off, Gary will start working on it now. You pay Gary a fee, invest in yourself, and when you come back to Team Hochberg to do your loan, we'll credit Gary's fee back to you. So that's one thing. On the little things, I was talking to a couple of our listeners last night. They absolutely have terrible credit right now because they have four late mortgage payments May of last year, July, August, and September. Okay, so I said, here's what we have to do. We have to get ready for September of this year. So I gave them a plan. I was on the phone with them for like 40 minutes last night, gave them a plan of what they had to do. We're going to follow up every 3 months to make sure they're on the plan. When we get to September, we're going to be able to refinance them out of their modified loan that they modified after the last downturn in 2010, get them into a 30-year fixed loan. They have a ton of equity they can't access right now, pay off all their debt, give an emergency fund. But I gave them a strict diet that they needed to go on. And if they follow it, which they will, by September, their credit scores will rebound. The four late mortgage payments will be a year old. Then we can refinance them and get them into a better rate.
Look ahead. Pay your bills on time. And here's a question that we got on the text at 815. And it brings up something I wanted to ask you about. Hi, Bob. Would you please ask David if there's a statute of limitations on credit card debt? That reminds me about these offers that you have sometimes to settle. And you hear the commercials, you can settle with your credit card companies. They don't want you to know you can do that. What's the story on that?
Yeah, here, if you're having financial challenges, if our listeners are having financial challenges, you could always call your credit card companies and say, I'm having financial challenges. What can you do to help me? Some of them will freeze the interest rate so they don't charge you any interest, put you on a payment plan. Others will settle up. But what's going to happen is your credit scores are going to take a ding.
For how long?
6 months to a year. But mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, if you're drowning, right, and you need to take a little hit in the head, take the hit in the head. Mm-hmm. Okay? You know, it's like throwing yourself a life preserver, but you don't like pink life preservers. So you're like, I'm not going to go for that because it's pink. What are you, nuts? If that's a way that you could get yourself into a better position, and your credit takes a little hit and you don't plan on doing anything for the next year or two, take the hit. Get yourself into a better position. You could also talk to Stephen A. Leahy, who's part of our show, Home Sweet Home Chicago. He's a bankruptcy attorney, and you could also look at that option. So negotiating yourself with the credit card companies, negotiating yourself with your debt collectors, if you have medical bills, okay? What's a medical bill? When they go to collection, the collection company buys it for pennies on the dollar from the doctor. Mm-hmm. So $1,000 debt might be sold to a collection company for $100 or $200. The doctor just wants their couple of $100. So now mm-hmm. the collection company's got $1,000 debt on their books. They'll play the game with you. They bought it for $100 to $200. That's their cost. They have to pay the person on the phone servicing that account because you're an account to them. You could call them up, cut your best deal with them, negotiate the best agreement you can. Most of them will take less than what's on your credit report. So if you have a $1,000 collection or $500, and you call up and you're nice and you're not a jerk and you're not just acidic on the phone to them, and you explain your situation, this is all you could afford,
and you talk softer than you do,
and you talk a lot softer and calmer, right? Then I get excited and worked up.
I know.
But if you explain your situation, hey, I was off of work. I got injured on work. I had a sick kid. Whatever your challenge was, just talk to them like human beings, and they will work with you. But you need to be ready to go with your ABA routing number and an account number, because they're going to want to ACH that money out of your account and take it out and pay that bill right away.
So when you settle with a collections company for a medical bill, are you going to also get the same kind of hit you would on the credit card?
Sure, it's a little bit of a hit, but you know what? A hit's a hit. Pay the damn thing off and move on. So if you have medical collections now or any type of collection, right? A lot of cell phone companies have collections. I've seen all the collections you could possibly think of. Timeshare, you put collections against people. Whatever the collection is, it's on your credit report. Settle up. Start healing. It's a third degree burn, turns into a second degree burn, turns into a first degree burn. Then you're out with suntan lotion and baby oil on a boat getting a suntan. All right, but you got to start the healing day one. This is the day. Start today.
He's the king of the analogies, David Hochberg. Let's tell everybody how they can actually get a free year's worth of mortgage or rent payments.
Oh, yeah.
How does that work?
It's ending this on the 29th. I teamed up with the Chicago Blackhawks. Hey, John. I teamed up with the Chicago Blackhawks to offer a opportunity to all of our listeners to get free rent payment and free mortgage payment for a year. All you have to go to register, it's registration's free. Go to chicagoblackhawks.com/TeamHochberg, chicagoblackhawks.com/TeamHochberg, HOCHBERG. We will pick two winners to rent, two winners for mortgage, go on to the ice, Chicago Blackhawks ice against the Nashville Predators in March. You shoot the puck, score, and we cover your mortgage and rent payment for a year.
Who's on your radio show Saturday morning here from 10 to noon on WGN?
John's friend, Ray Kaplan, who's coming on. She was a killer. She's unbelievable. She's helped thousands of people.
Wait, is this coming on your show or coming on my show?
Probably both, because I got her off of your show.
I borrowed her.
She's phenomenal. A gentleman by the name of Mark Toomey, who's a financial guru, who's created an app so our listeners could track all their financial vehicles. MegaPros, Joe MegaPros Home Improvements, and Gary Novell, the credit expert, 10 o'clock tomorrow, Saturday, right here on WGN.
David, thank you.
Thank you.
And have John, a nice, relaxing day.
I will try.
Okay.
That is him relaxed. It's the morning. I don't even think, you don't drink coffee, do you, David?
Not yet, no.
You don't drink alcohol either, do
no,
you?
No, I don't. I probably
You're just
should.
Kind of like this, aren't
He's
you?
He's naturally nuts, John. The news is coming up in moments from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And before we get a preview from John Williams, wanted to mention this. We've been talking about Lee Phillip, who passed away at the age of 91. The TV talk show host on Channel 2 here for more than 30 years, and with her husband Bill Bell behind The Young and the Restless and The Bold and the Beautiful. The florist, the flower shop, is still going strong out there in Cicero. Phillips Flower, still operated by relatives of the Phillips family. All right, now then, we get to John and what's coming up today. By the way, I walked by your office.
By the way, here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of people. We're going to have a whole bunch of people on. And then we're going to talk about things and we're going to tell you about things. It's sort of like the thing about the thing. If it's like the thing, it's like the thing.
That's how you're going to have to talk. If you talk about all the books I saw in your office, you must have 700 books piled up there. What do you do with all those? You can't possibly read them all.
I've read them all. Ask me anything about anything. I know everything. I got all the information.
Maybe you get Cliff's notes. I don't expect anybody to be able to read all of those books.
I should confess, Bob, that I was a little amused when Dave Bennett blew out your candle. You were...
I beg your pardon?
Well, there you were, so happy that you had exchanged text messages or Twitter messages with Ron Howard.
Yes, I did.
And I'm like, dang, Surratt getting it done.
I know, he spoiled it.
And he goes, well, it was probably just his people that were tweeting.
I didn't say it was probably, I said it could have been.
I believe Ron Howard does that himself.
You know, I do too. After I saw the tweet, after we spoke, I saw the tweet, and I do think it came from Ron Howard.
Ron Howard put Apollo 13 on pause and said, you know what, I'm going to send a message to that Bob Surratt guy.
I like the Pavarotti documentary he did. Did you ever see it? It's fabulous.
No, I didn't know
anything. It's running on Showtime now.
I'm going to watch it now.
It disappeared from the theaters quickly. You didn't hear a lot about it, but it's spectacular, and you don't need to be an opera fan to enjoy it.
I don't know anything about this.
Well, you'll love it when you see it, and you'll know a lot about Pavarotti.
And after I see it, I'm going to tweet at Bob Surratt.
I'll answer.
And see if he'll respond,
well,
or if his
actually,
people will.
No, Joe or Vivian will respond to that.
That's what I thought. Dave.
Hey, Ron Howard's tweet's gotten 180 some likes so far.
You're blowing up the Twitter.
So you're out there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. All right, John.
Yesterday,
anything else from you?
Well, yesterday we talked a little bit about people's OCD-like habits. I just want to review a couple of those. And on a much more serious note, our Ryan Burrow is in Milwaukee. The latest from that coming up after the news.
We'll be listening, and I hope you'll be with us tomorrow. Meantime, have a great day, and thanks for being with us.